Welcome to the podcast. It's Ben. It's Lucas coming at you right now.
Or whenever you get your podcasts.
It's 2022. The pandemic is over. Well, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, you know, I'm okay. I spent the week knocking doors and talking to strangers, and had some immediate success. It's like riding a bike. I'm spending a lot of time in like the bleakest part of the suburbs, which is really interesting. I've gotten some good photographs of just like the repetitive, you know, townhome complexes and things like that. Seeing the way the other half lives, so to speak.
Are you going to make bank as a door-to-door salesman?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I'm good at it. It's easy. It's like mostly a numbers game, right? Like you just need to talk to as many people as possible. Not spend too much energy with folks that are not worth the energy. And then when you get the opportunity, just try to seize it. But, you know, I'm skilled at it and hopefully can build it into, you know, a good little living.
Would you consider yourself a closer?
Oh, yeah. I'm always closing.
Always be.
Always be.
Closing.
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 That way, man, has the Cajun restaurant.
Oh, it's good, man. It's good. I love Cajun foods, Cajun cuisines. Cajun services. I live to serve. Podcast. Actually, I think this is coming so naturally to me that I think I may have been born to podcast.
I think so.
Because I don't know how I feel about Cajun goods and services anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it was such a passion for you for so long, but the fire's gone out on Cajun services.
Yeah, no, they're not in demand. Crawdudding and swamp wrestling, you know, all that shit, man.
A2 Financial Services.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
How's your bike ride been? How's your commute been treating you?
I've been sick, this last week I didn't ride a lot, and then I subsequently went insane. Trying to just lay around the house. I've been kind of coming to the realization that, like, I'm constantly just, like, numbing the pain of being alive. You know, whether it's with, like, screens or drugs or alcohol.
I don't know if I find myself actively numbing the pain, but I do find myself feeling numb, and that usually feels better than the pain. I told you I got bit by a dog, right?
Yeah, are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine, but I have a pretty nasty gash on my leg. I have a follow-up on Wednesday to make sure it's not infected.
Damn.
You know, I was knocking doors, and a little girl answered the door, and this dog just, like, knocked her over and came right at me. I'm glad I turned around, because if it had gotten my crotch, it would have been pretty nasty, because it got, like, the fleshy part of my leg, which was sort of best-case scenario. But yeah, he fucked my leg up pretty good. I was bleeding, tore a big hole in my pants.
Damn, bro.
Yeah.
Dog-on-dog violence.
and so the craziest thing is I got bit by the dog, and the little girl's, like, staring at me. And the dog is, like, maybe going to come back outside because he, like, ran back inside. And I, you know, said to the kid, like, you can close the door. Like, it's fine. It's fine, I said. And then the mom or whoever comes out, and the first thing she says to me is, we're not interested. And I said, that's fine. Just so you know, your dog attacked me. Your dog bit me. And she went, no. And I said, yeah, It bit me pretty good. Got me on the leg here. She said, "Oh, well, are you bleeding?" And I said, "Yeah, I am." So I took your address down. Is the dog be vaccinated? Does it have a shot? And she said, "Ah, I don't know. We're just house sitting, and we're really not interested." That floored me. The second "we're not interested" just floored me because I was not in any way trying to sell her on
You should have
anything.
closed. You should have closed. A real closer would have closed that deal.
You're right. I should have rebutted her. I should have been like, "Hey, I understand you didn't expect to
Buy
sign up
windows
with
today.
the guy that got attacked by your dog, but I'm gonna sue you if you don't." So, what's a good
What are
phone
you
number to reach
selling
at?
right now?
What's that?
What are you selling right now?
I set appointments. I set appointments so that folks can
For
get price quote on replacing their windows and doors. So,
So you're right back where you started like 6 years ago.
yeah.
I bet that feels great. I bet that feels fucking good.
It's
Yeah,
humbling. It's humbling, yeah.
I feel that, dude. That's how I feel though, selling gumbo. It's like
Yeah.
I'm right where I was. I was thinking this morning, like in about 18 months, I'll have been out of college for exactly 10 years. And
Yep.
I'm still just a fucking cashier
Yep.
at a shitty restaurant.
Yep. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. And I mean, the gig I had was better. It was cool. But I didn't make enough money, and honestly, knocking doors and setting appointments is a path forward. So I'm trying to take it, trying to be humble.
Yeah. Life said, sit down, bitch.
Yeah, pretty much. Life kicked my butt, and then it bit me with a dog.
So, are we going to tell the folks at home? Wow. Because here's the thing. When you start a podcast, sure, no one's listening now, right?
Yeah.
But if we continue podcasting, eventually a lot of people will listen to this episode. So, are we going to tell them how you got fired last week?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's a good story about, the state of things and the world. So I worked for a large cultural nonprofit, significant institution regionally. I was an administrator. I did a lot of contracting support and invoicing and vendor relations. Did a lot of like systems maintenance and systems improvement. Managed some calendars. Did a lot of general administrative assistant business support work. And I really enjoyed it. There are those three letters in front of non, sorry, three letters in front of profit that, kept my salary where it was, and I was paid fairly. But times is tough, and it's been hard to make ends meet living. I live in Denver, Colorado. Rent is high, cost of food is high, everything has just gotten more and more expensive. And there was a function by which I could claim some of my paycheck early. And I was using that, and a couple of times I used it to my advantage. I would log more hours than I had worked already in a pay cycle, and then take the money that was available to me for those hours, and then reset my timesheet. And I would never exceed what I would earn by the end of the cycle. And I was paid 2 weeks behind as an hourly employee. And so, I was careful to never be in a position where I owed the institution money. But, I broke the rules, and it's a nonprofit that, has some government funding and things like that. And it was sort of zero tolerance, and I got fired immediately when they discovered that. It was pretty cold. Just about nobody's reached out. I worked there for over 2 years. I had a good reputation. I had built a lot of great relationships there. And yeah, it's been cold, just sort of like completely cut off.
They must have told everybody that you like embezzled money.
I I talked to one person who's a good friend of mine, and she told me she works at the institution, and she said they sent an email that just said, due to unforeseen circumstances, Lucas no longer works here. Please respect his privacy at this time. So I think they were actually discreet, but I think that everyone must be drawing conclusions, right? And I did. I mean, I touched millions of dollars of museum transactions. So it was probably the right thing for them to do, considering my malfeasance. I can understand the decision that they made. I own my part in it for sure, but it just goes to show that, like, even when it just goes to show that, you know, no matter how good you think your relationship is with your employer, no matter how good of an employee you are, that power relationship with the institution and the capital that exists will always trump your relationship with them. And, you know, there was no conversation when I was let go. You know, I was told, I'm sorry that the situation was so desperate for you that you had to do this. And, you know, it's a place that talks a lot about community and mutual aid and taking care of each other. And
sure.
When someone shows you, someone you care about or someone that's in your community shows you that they are experiencing some desperation, in my ideal society, you know, there would be a different course of action that would be taken.
But here's the thing. You definitely left a paper trail, right? Like, it's I'm of the opinion that if you give the monkey the option to press a button, the monkey is going to press the button.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it's like you were given a button you could press that would allow you to pay your bills.
Yeah.
And you press the button.
Yep.
And you, I don't know, you just took an advance. You just took a little widow extra advance. Just a widow extra. Through the tools you were provided to me. Through the tools that were provided to me. Just a widow extra bonus.
Yeah.
Nah, man, they definitely got you bad. Yeah. Dead to rights.
Yeah. And, you know, I shouldn't have, considering my relatively desperate situation, I should not have put it in jeopardy by, you know, being the monkey clicking the button. You know, I definitely had a part to play, but yeah, just trying to treat it as a blessing in disguise. It is humbling being back doing the thing I was doing 6 years ago, but hey, I have skills. At least I don't have to carry a pack of shingles up a ladder or something.
Dude, this is like your opportunity to embrace the Sigma grind set. Like, ascend to the astral plane.
What's step one?
I call it turbo mode. Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know, man. I've been trying to hustle and just make stuff, and look at me, I'm miserable. Look at me,
man.
I have nothing to show for it. Except six shitty websites and no money at all.
You've got, you know, I wouldn't say your websites are shitty. I mean, no one cares about them, but they're pretty cool. I care about them. Do you want to talk about what you built? I know you sent me the census maps visualization that you made earlier this week. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I was just playing with I was trying to make visualizations of frequent bus networks. There is a someone published, I forget the title, but it's like an opinionated transit atlas. One sec. Christoph Spieler, Trains, Buses, People, an opinionated atlas of U.S. transit. So on each page for each city, there's like a visualization of certain employment centers and population density, and it's overlaid with the frequent network. So any transit that has like a certain headway is like plotted on top of the employment and population density, and it makes it really easy to see who's doing well and who's not doing well and like serving their population.
I mean, is anybody doing well?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, New York, Boston, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Seattle. Not terrible. But no, so I had just I had written a little bit of Python to take the GTFS feed, basically the data feed straight from the bus system here in Austin, and sort of take that information and render it into just a map of the frequent routes. And I was trying to write it to where I could sort of just take the feed from any American city and then feed it into the code and have it spit out that visualization. But the visualization is like a large format printable map of your whole metro region with all the frequent routes on it. So you can see like, well, this is the network of actually functional transit for this whole metro. And in Austin, it's small, but if you were to run it on New York, you know, they have hundreds of frequent buses and a bunch of metros. So we'll see. I'll definitely be feeding some more data into that soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really valuable visualization, just considering the topic. And I mean, it could be useful for users as well.
Nothing I make is useful for the end user.
You should put that on the banner of your website.
I live for this shit. I live to fucking podcast, okay?
We are getting, they've actually broken ground here in Denver on a bus rapid transit corridor through Central East Denver on Colfax Avenue, the longest, wickedest strode in America. It's the longest contiguous surface street in the United States, which is a fun fact, but you know, historically it was the route that people coming from the east took into Denver, if you, especially if you weren't on a train. It was the main road into the city, and Denver, if you look at it on the map, is, you know, essentially one giant grid with, you know, a big ring road, and Colfax through the heart of Denver is definitely the highest ridership for any bus line in the region, and they are running. They've broken ground. They're going to be running level boarding, dedicated lane, center running BRT for, I think it's like
How do we feel about
3
center running
miles.
BRT?
Well, it's, you know, it's better because the buses will get caught in less traffic trying to weave in and out, or getting caught behind cars turning right.
But so I mean, you're saying it's just 3 miles of dedicated right of way?
Yeah, it's not a ton.
Is the rest of the route in traffic? Okay. Bro, like it should be. I honestly think it should be illegal to call certain things bus rapid transit, because like Austin claims to have bus rapid transit, right? But there is like 1 mile of shared like right turn dedicated right of way.
Have you, well, have you used the population around a point tool?
No.
It's a pretty good tool. I'll send it to you in our chat here. Where's the chat in a Google chat? There we go. Sorry, I'm new to podcasting. Go easy on me. I know you've been a podcast chad for a long time,
I was
but
born to do this.
The guy, Tom Forth, is the name of the person who built this tool. And he describes his methodology and his code on the webpage that I sent you. It's pretty cool. But it gives you an approximation of the population around any given point. So
In
if I
the world?
do, yeah, if I do 3 kilometers around what will be essentially the heart of that bus rapid transit line in Denver, there's over 113,000 people inside the radius of like the center of where that line is going to run. So
Sure.
yes, it would be better if it ran all the way out to Aurora or all the way out to the west side of Denver to Lakewood. But it's a start. And the fact that there was enough political will in central Denver to decrease car lanes on one of the main thoroughfares is, I think, a huge victory. So it's better than nothing.
Denver is where they invented hiking. That's a fun fact.
They did invent hiking in Denver. Yeah, they were looking at the mountains. They said, we got to do something about this.
I think they also invented lesbians, if I'm not mistaken.
We didn't invent lesbians, but we have perfected lesbianism.
That is so true. That is so true. I've never heard a truer statement. Quintessential lesbianism originated in Denver, Colorado.
Yeah.
But not,
Denver's.
and let's face it, lesbianism is quintessentially suburban. Oh my goodness.
That's an interesting argument. I know I have a
No,
lot of
yeah, the
sapphic
gays
friends.
urban, lesbians suburban. Don't quote me. That's so untrue. Now, I know a lot of urban lesbians.
Yeah, me too.
They still need their gay bars.
But yeah, I like
I
the
assume
population
I,
around a point, because if you
dude, I
grow
zoomed
the.
into a random suburb in Denver. I'm like on the map now, and it's
Yeah.
Columbine.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
I'm like, oh,
Yep.
fuck, that one's there too. I was thinking of Aurora.
Yep. No, we've got the
Dude,
biggest and the best.
you guys have some famous ones.
Yep. But no, if you like look at the if you play with population around a point in Denver, it really tells you the story of suburbanization in the fact that like the population densities in the suburbs are actually as great and in some places greater than in central Denver. Which is pretty wild. Because it's just where all the stock has been built. You know, they call some of it transit-oriented development.
Yeah.
But I don't know, does it count
No.
as transit-oriented development if it's along a freeway that runs a bus that's allowed to run on the shoulder? Like, I'd love the sort of Wild West of that, but I just don't
I
think it
have never.
counts.
Denver is terrifying. Like,
Yep.
it's like LA. It's I'm just looking at this fucking map and I'm like, what the fuck? It's like LA, but if LA has like neighborhoods that are old, and it's like there's just so much suburb here.
Yeah, I mean, Denver has neighborhoods that are as old as Denver, so, you know, 1880s, really.
And then everyone's contained in these like super blocks, this like mega grid.
Yeah, mega grid. One grid, population, everyone. That's how I'd describe Denver. It's great for car users. It actually is a fairly efficient city in terms of moving people around in motor vehicles. You gotta hand it to that. I mean, it's way easier to drive around Denver than it is to drive around Austin.
Yeah. But it's also nicer to walk around Austin than it is to walk around Denver.
Yes. Yes, for the
Yeah.
most part.
Austin's livable as fuck. Certain part where I live is nice, very nice. Very nice. I live in a nice neighborhood. You can say
Yeah.
I'm rich.
Oh,
For those wondering, I live in like a $600 apartment in like a student ghetto.
yeah. Student ghetto is a pretty good way to describe your block. Yeah, I mean
Oh, fuck.
spending, you know, a little less than a week in Austin again, you know, I've done that most years for the last 5 or 6 years, and it is a friendlier place to be outside of a car. At least in the developed city districts, like everything around UT's campus, which I would call an extremely effective city district. You see people outside. There's, you know, tons of diversity of uses, a lot of cross use, a lot of secondary diversity being generated. Like you just see so many people outside, and this is true of so many of our, you know, colleges and campus areas. which is a shame because, you know, people, students are in a very specific time in their life where their needs and their uses are more predictable and more easier to centralize. But there's definitely something to be learned there. And in Denver, even around the campuses, it just doesn't exist. Everybody drives everywhere, except for those who don't. But those who don't are relegated to have to cross, you know, eight-lane highways.
Eight-lane roads everywhere.
Yeah. And the drag is sort of its own animal, but it is at least sort of like to people scale. Could be better.
The drag sustains a ton of pedestrian traffic.
Yeah.
The drag sustains an insane amount of pedestrian traffic for how hostile a physical environment it is.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Like, oh, Jesus Christ. West Campus is so dense. West Campus is Lower Manhattan dense. Maybe denser than certain parts of Lower Manhattan. Like, especially with how it was rezoned. But, oh my God, it's a sea of people. Yeah, I'm definitely glad I put up all the Roadway Report stickers in West Campus.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I live here. It's where I put up most of the stickers. And, like, penny for penny, it's a very good advertising investment.
Yeah. I don't know. Population around a point seems to tell us that Lower Manhattan is about five times as densely populated as West Campus.
Are you sure that how many kilometers is your radius?
Three.
Well, West Campus isn't that big.
Right.
If you just do Wampus itself, it's very dense.
It is. I mean, especially, I mean, they've built the
and you have to understand that, like, everything outside of the boundaries is, like, something like 10 to 20 times less dense. Even in the downtown area.
Yeah.
There's, like, single-family homes.
Yeah, and there's just a lot of, like, I mean, if you take population at a point, you click where the word Austin is on the city map, there's only like 100,000 people in that 3 mile radius, which is crazy, but it's because there aren't that many residences. And that captures.
We're the only ones who have like a livable quality of life. There's like the us 100,000 people. And then there's like 1.5 to 2 million people who live in like suburban hell.
Yeah, but I mean, people like to live that way. And with the automobile, it doesn't make it hellish.
No, I mean, they love it. They love it. It makes it hellish for us, the people who just want to live in peace in the city.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, if you go out into the hill country, I mean, very quickly, you're down to, like, less than 10,000 people in a 3 kilometer radius. What about, like, the heart of Round Rock? Yeah, 70,000.
It's as dense.
It is. Yeah, I mean, it's like 70% as dense.
To be fair, that's where the hood is in Round Rock. Like, that's all fair. The apartments, all the multifamily is by downtown.
Yep.
All right, I'm consulting my resources. I'm consulting censusmaps.org.
I don't know if you've looked recently at the Google Maps view of Austin. I'm sure that you... No, I don't want the Austin neighborhood in Chicago. I was looking at that the other day. Pivot Gang. Are you familiar with a place called Daffin? It's between...
Oh, yeah. It's,
like, Manor.
Daffin Lane. It's like a bicycle road.
Yeah. I never knew of a place called Daffin in like all my time.
People bike there. I bike there all the time, actually.
It looks nice.
That's one of the streets I have to cross. Oh, yeah, no. The Nut is on Daffin Lane.
Nice. Google says that Daffin is, well, it doesn't say, but it like populates as like a census designated place. I've just never heard of it before.
Well, are you sure it's a census designated place?
I'm not. I'm just saying it populates as such on the map. Well.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. Served the communities as a station. It was a station on the railroad.
Yeah.
In the 30s and 40s. It just says, the article from the Texas State Historical Association just says, it was the 1985 county highway map identified Daffin, but showed no buildings at the site.
Yeah, there's like that lake out there.
Yeah, that lake is to power, is to cool, like, I think a power plant.
Nice.
Yeah, don't swim.
No, I was looking at it because of where our friend Trace had been living, out in just, like, the distant suburbs.
Just looking at the map. I'm looking at all the parts of East Austin that we're going to eventually destroy under this public policy framework.
Yeah.
Like, it'll all die. It'll all die. It'll all become Houston.
Yeah. I mean, it is inevitable that cities change. It's just sad that, you know, all of our cities who experienced the changes that they did through urban renewal and redlining were just sort of like building on that legacy by continuing to displace Black and brown people. It's just sort of a slightly different development scheme. And I think this development scheme might be slightly more positive in the long run because it is denser housing, closer to places of work, but
yeah,
it's still just heartbreaking that we can't, that there's no political will, that they've successfully extracted political will from historic neighborhoods to the point where the only political will that exists is people that want to maintain the character of the community by not changing it at all. And so neighborhoods are set either to stagnate or to be knocked down. There's sort of this binary that emerges because of the lack of robust political will and the lack of our neighborhoods' ability to reinvent themselves and continually be changing and growing and reacting to the needs of the city.
I'm just looking at East Austin on the map and just like the historic Black part of town and how, like, I'm just looking at how the urban form itself sort of tells the story of like a community that once existed, right? Like, mm-hmm. There's the strip, there's the school, there's the park, you know? And I just think about how I'm like, I'm always weaving in and out of this area, and it's almost haunted by like what was there.
And how would you describe what is what the new development is bringing?
It's a bunch of fucking yuppies. It's fucking ridiculous. You know, a bunch of dirty hippies and yuppies and young people, young white people. And it's like, I don't know. Like, we'll be biking by a place that had, like, Negro League professional baseball played, and it's like, the fuck? You know, and I don't know. The people who lived there back in the heyday described it as a very vibrant, like, economically thriving community.
Yeah.
And that's gone. It's like, there is no sense of community at all.
I mean, I might challenge that. Like,
have you seen? I mean, dude.
I mean, I agree. I mean, the point that I just made is that, you know, our communities have generally lost their political will, and that's largely due to a fracturing of the sense of community. But I don't know. I just hesitate. And you know a lot more about, you know, it's your city, but it's not your neighborhood. And so I hesitate sometimes to, like, assert things like, oh, there's no community here. When I don't.
I mean, there's still people. There's still people.
Yeah. And so there must be some
level.
The
way it was described was that, like, people would come together at certain institutions in the center of the community. And those are, like, gone. Like, the high school's gone.
Yeah.
You know, there's no professional baseball anymore. There's no, you know.
But there's 5-over-1s with Chipotle's and Hop Dotties. And
not even.
I'm literally looking at a street at 5th and, let's see.
Well, that's the Mexican part of town.
5th and Walter.
Yeah.
Well, that was, it's walkable to that baseball park from there.
Now that area is dank. Because I believe, to my knowledge, that was all industrial zoning,
mm-hmm.
Which never should have been in a residential area. But it was because it was between, like, the Mexican and Black neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
HTU's still holding strong, man.
Yeah.
Still there. That's some value. Man, no, the world doesn't like it when Black people stumble into, like, valuable real estate. It's very close to downtown, is what I'm saying.
It is.
Yeah. HTU. Let's go Rams.
So, you know, I mean, I guess that, like, one of my major questions is, how do you balance it? You know, there's all this money that's poured into Austin from the tech companies that have built these, you know, skyscrapers, and all these people have moved there. You know, it's a supplement and, dare I say, fake news capital of the world. Alex Jones lives in Austin, Texas. Like, it's a cultural center. It's a place that people really want to live. And it's a place where a lot of high paying jobs have been located. So as that draws these, you know, rich yuppies, for lack of a better term, into the city, like, how do we cope with that without ruining these historic neighborhoods and the sense of community that we're talking about? Like, is there a way to do it, or is it just all, you know, sort of tainted by the nature of the capital?
No, I don't know. I don't know where the city goes. I think as long as we have a private system of housing, people are going to struggle.
Yeah. So I guess the question becomes, like, where are the places that exist the urban fabric and the potential for community in the after times? Right?
In,
like,
Austin?
Which of our cities, I guess, is what I'm saying.
There will be none of this in the after times. This will all be considered hubris, you know.
You'll still be podcasting, though.
I'll be podcasting. I was born to do this shit. I'll die because of this shit.
You'll
have to come and get me. Intifada. Who's that guy? Who's that guy with the fatwa on Salman Rushdie?
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
One sec. We're gonna. Wow. This is good. This is good shit. Fuck.
San Antonio's got, like, 4 ring roads.
The Rushdie affair was a controversy sparked by the 1988 publication of Salman Rushdie's novel, The Satanic Verses. It centered on the novel's references to the Satanic Verses, the apocryphal verses of the Quran, and came to include a larger debate about censorship and religious violence. It included numerous killings, attempted killings, including against Rushdie himself and bombings by perpetrators who supported Islam. The affair had a notable impact on geopolitics when, in 1989, Khomeini, the supreme leader of Iran, issued a fatwa ordering Muslims to kill Rushdie. The Iranian government has changed its support for the fatwa several times, including in 1998 when Mohammad Khatami said that the regime no longer supported it.
I'm like, eh, I don't have to.
However, this is good shit. However, a fatwa cannot be revoked in Shia Islamic tradition.
Wow, it's like forever. Wow, you can't make up for it.
It is a fatwa, after all.
Yeah.
Current Supreme Leader Khomeini stating the decree is as Khomeini. Oh God, it's the same name, but it's different. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's some good shit. Someone, hey, dude, we got a podcast until somebody fatwas us.
That would be good.
I hope it's TxDOT.
Cease and desist from TxDOT would be a sign that we were doing something right.
Yeah, TxDOT can suck my fucking dick.
There's a TxDOT neighborhood.
Can eat my ass.
There's a neighborhood in San Antonio. It's just east of, what freeway is this? Highway 281. The Staff Sergeant William J. Bordelon Freeway, if you prefer the honorary nomenclature. And it's called Dignity Hill.
Yeah, yeah. That's a nice, people like that place, right?
I think so. It looks like
it's left Texas. Of the what freeway? The 281?
The 287? I did nobody know about this neighborhood until today. Yeah, 281. 281, sorry. It's the freeway that sort of borders downtown San Antonio.
There's a park in it, and the park in it has no trees.
Dignity Park. They dig no.
No, it's just winter. No. It's got some trees.
There's a few trees, yeah.
Yeah, this street sucks, though.
It does.
Every street sucks.
Hackberry Street. Ooh, there's a bus.
What's the point of having a.
The number 22 heading downtown.
Bro, I love Mexican houses.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean houses in Mexico. I mean houses in America owned by Mexican American people.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking like angels, bars on the windows, cute colors.
Mm-hmm.
God bless this house. That's definitely in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I often feel like you can sense that, you know, it's a meeting place. It's a place where people gather. There's a flavor to it and uniqueness.
This area is obviously being gentrified.
Yeah.
You can tell. I see a contrast of like old housing stock and then stuff that's obviously been renovated recently.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're logging into Zillow, America's favorite map.
Yeah, damn. There is a one bed, one bath, 650 square foot condo apartment for sale on, according to Zillow, for $272 at like 39th and Avenue D. Hester's Crossing, there it is. Silver Spur. Oh, you can get a way cheaper house. $350, that's not so bad. Three bed, two bath on that road that I lived on when we first moved to Texas. Man, it was like the whole currency of my love, like teasing me, like the whole currency was that I was poor. Like that was almost my entire fucking moniker.
You weren't even that poor.
I know.
Yeah, that's sad.
But I lived on, you know, I lived on the wrong side, literally, of the railroad tracks.
in the center of the ghetto.
In the ghetto.
That's your theme song.
In the ghetto.
No, I mean, the first day that we moved into that neighborhood, you know, I was coming from rural Utah, so it was a big change. There was like a helicopter circling the neighborhood, like trying to find a perp.
Nice.
And I was like, what the hell have you done to me, parents? And it was like 99 degrees and humid, which I had never really experienced.
Wasn't the last place you live in like a craftsman home that your father built?
Yeah. I mean, it was, I mean, you know, I wouldn't, it was a nice place. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In a it would have had like everything you needed and probably a little bit more.
Yeah. In small town, Utah.
Sure. Sure.
And so it's just a different, very different speed. Ooh, $15 million for a house out in the mansion in the hill country.
Okay, let's talk about livable urban fabric that people can afford.
All right, like, I'm going to Duluth.
I mean, New Orleans.
Can you afford New Orleans?
Yeah, New Orleans isn't that expensive.
I have a friend who's a real estate agent there.
Hurricane Katrina.
I tell you, Duluth I think is the ticket.
Duluth, yeah, but it's cold.
It's pretty cold, but
it's like 2,000 miles away from New Orleans, and it's at the same like longitude line.
Yeah. Ooh, price cut. They cut the price $2,500 on this Victorian home in downtown Duluth. You can pick it up for $162K. Built in 1905.
Every time a woman leaves me, it's for the city of Philadelphia. And I do think that there's something about Philly that strikes a very good compromise with livability and cost.
Yeah, Philly. I feel like if you really want to live have a properly urban existence, you know, not use a motor vehicle, have access to, you know, top level amenities, Philadelphia, Chicago. I feel like living in Chicago is sort of the cheat.
If you want to live in Midland, Texas, you can get a fucking gigantic home for $200,000.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. I'd probably put like top tier American cities like Chicago, Philadelphia, Portland, Seattle. I don't know. The thing about listing Seattle and New York is like normies can't live there. You know? The affordability problem is such a problem at this point that it's like, can you really even recommend it to a normal person?
Yeah. That's what I find more and more frustrating and difficult about living in Denver is like the prices are like that with, you know, basically none of the urban fabric and amenities that I would prefer.
Hey, maybe we go to Salt Lake City. I've been watching that show about polygamists. That show's crazy. All his wives are beginning to hate him.
Well, that's what happens.
It's so funny. He's like, everyone he meets is like, how do you put up with four women? That's like every guy's response. It's just... I can barely deal with one wife.
I'm pretty sure that's how that show got greenlit.
It's so good.
No.
It's a really good show.
Salt Lake City honestly looks like it's the same. It would be the same as Denver with like more Mormons.
It looks, you know, it looks exactly like Denver in a sense. It looks like big mega grid, religious fundamentalists. Looks like one of these suburbs is called White City.
Yeah, that's pretty incriminating.
Welcome to White City.
We're moving to White City. I like that there's a town called Agricultural Park. That's good.
Yeah, if you could find an affordable place in San Diego, you'd live pretty well.
I actually met someone that works for the transit authority in San Diego a couple weeks ago. She said if you don't live downtown, like, you'd basically kill yourself.
Yeah, I know. So real. So real.
When I was a kid, we almost moved to Palmdale, K California. It's on the other side of the mountains from LA. Out the 14. You can get, wow, it's expensive to live out there in that like weird shitty desert.
You see why people move to Texas the moment you look at California real estate prices.
It's true.
See why they all come here. Because it's like the biggest house in the hill country is like $5 million. But in California, it's like $30 million, $50
million. Yeah. Okay. Least livable urban environments in the United States. Phoenix has to be the
I don't even want to say Los Angeles because there's so much of LA that is livable.
Yeah, yeah. And it would be, I think, wrong to indict LA entirely. But Phoenix, I feel pretty good about indicting entirely.
Phoenix, Los Angeles, Houston. I don't know. I mean, I've never been to Miami, so I can't really speak to it. But the death map indicates that South Florida is a horrible place to live.
I feel like Dallas is pretty bleak.
I'm just going to zoom in. I'm just going to draw myself in Miami somewhere and just see what it looks like.
Nice. We should play that game where you try to guess where you are on the map. We should play that game
and
record it.
It's pretty. Miami looks pretty dense. I mean, the area that I'm in.
It is. You get outside of, like, Miami proper into, like, what's the name of that place next to it? It's not Hiawatha.
I definitely dropped myself in the hood, though. There's, like, trash everywhere. Bars on the windows. You know the drill.
Miami. Hialeah. Like, you get outside of that sort of... I mean, and look at the freeway infrastructure in downtown Miami. It's crazy. And you get outside of that... Essentially, where like it looks like there's a streetcar that serves tourists. Like you get outside of that, even over. Let's see. I'm gonna throw myself over here. Yeah, it's, you know, dense as Denver. You know, it's. It would be hard to walk to the store from there.
I'm on a street called Marginal Access Road. I'm lost. I'm so lost.
In Plantation, Florida.
Yeah.
Marginal Access. I want to live on Marginal Access.
If you need me, I'll be on Marginal Access Road in Plantation, Florida.
It looks really nice.
It does.
Well, it's because your access is only marginal, so. You know.
Also, this neighborhood has sidewalks.
Yeah, don't get all the riffraff.
This neighborhood has sidewalks that are, like, really far from the street, which is nice. They're, like, 6 feet, 8 feet from the street.
The street is also quite narrow. I mean, there's only marginal access, so.
Yeah.
Ooh, there's a lady on the street view.
I don't know. I was like, my barber, I got a haircut, and the guy was like, I'm from South Florida. I'm like, oh, like, yeah, I love Miami's cool. He's like, I'm not from Miami. I'm from South Florida. And I'm like, all right, bro. I don't care.
Where are you from? Yeah.
You're from Miami, where was he? Dumbass.
Where was he from?
Who fucking cares? Miami. Fucking yeah. Miami. I don't know. I think he's in Broward County.
Because it's Miami-Dade is like the central. Yeah, Broward County is Hollywood, Fort Lauderdale, Pompano Beach. I mean,
it's Florida, the one over. It's the next one.
Well, and like to your point, Miami and Southern Florida is really interesting because like the urban development has a very like clear boundary because of the swamps and the Everglades, like.
Right, right.
It just stops. Like, you either live in the city or you don't. you know, obviously there's a lot of the city, the urban development is suburban in form, but it is like not rural development. Like the roads are, it's not like you live on a dirt road, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Bro, Miami's nice as fuck. Who am I kidding? Look at all these fucking cute little houses. Everybody lives on the water. Everything is a consumer product.
You can't get your home insured there anymore.
Everybody lives on the water. And then it's like Strode's.
Yeah.
And there's a fence between everything.
I like I love looking at some of the some of the suburban developments in like outside Tampa. Like, it's just crazy the way that they've built, like how engineered some of these places are.
Yeah.
Engineered for so much waste. Las Vegas is pretty bleak too.
Yeah, Vegas is a fucked up place. Vegas is very poor. Just like, it's a lot of working class people. It's a very big city.
Yeah.
And then like one strip. And similar to Austin, there's a lot of service work. A lot of service work.
Detroit is goated.
Detroit, yeah, all-time urban sprawl capital of the world.
Well, yeah, they invented the automobile there. But like the pre automobile urban fabric in Detroit is very, very cool.
Chicago may be the number one livable city in America.
Yeah, I think for like bang for your buck, I feel like Chicago does the trick.
Everybody, there isn't a single person who moves to Chicago and then leaves. No one leaves. Everyone's like, wait, it's like $400 a month and there's like fucking Italian meats everywhere. It's good. I can get a steak sandwich for $6.
Yeah. I mean, that was...
I was just going to say, Philly cheesesteaks, whack. Fucking whack. Whack ass food. No one's ever made a good Philly cheesesteak.
You don't like a Philly cheesesteak?
Fuck your city. Your city sucks. Come to Austin, have a breakfast taco. Get a slice of pizza. Go have a cultural experience. Chop up some steak and put it with some cheese whiz. What the fuck kind of signature dish is a Philly cheesesteak?
Steak sandwich featuring cheese. Fuck.
They put cheese whiz on it. The way it's supposed to come has, like, cheese whiz. What the fuck are we doing? It's like New York is, like, an abundance, a diversity of culture. And then it's as if there's, like, a culture vacuum.
Yeah, I mean, Philly was just, like, working-class Irish people. Like, the cheesesteak to me, like, echoes back to Irish heritage. Like, it's such a simple, straightforward food. It's you know, obviously inherently American, but I feel like it's the Irish heritage that gives us the Philly cheesesteak, really. I mean, there's probably an answer to that question.
All right, we're Googling it. Look out, world. What is Joe Rogan's assistant's name? Kenny, what does he ask to pull up the slides?
I'm sort of proud to say I've never... once listened to his podcast.
Why would you be proud of that? He's the best podcaster of all time.
I know. That's what gives me...
learn from the best. Jamie. His name is Jamie.
Jamie. Get Jamie on it. I'm looking at where the Philadelphia Museum of Art is on the map, and like, you can't walk to the Philadelphia Museum of Art. Or is this like a pedestrian?
Wait, yeah, whoa. Philly Museum of Art, let me see. You must be able to walk there, Phil. It's a real city.
No, it's like the 676, the 76, and the Ben Franklin Parkway. You have to cross some pretty serious roads to get there.
Yeah, that's awful what they do to you.
If but you it's... lived at these, this weird new development on Parktown Place, you could walk there, I think. Yeah, it's not that new, probably 80s. All right, what's the scoop on the cheesesteak?
Okay. History of the cheesesteak. The cheesesteak, also known as a Philadelphia cheesesteak, Philly cheesesteak, cheesesteak sandwich, cheese steak, or steak and cheese is a sandwich made from thinly sliced pieces of beefsteak and melted cheese in a long hoagie roll. A popular regional fast food, it has roots in the United States city of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. In the early 20th century, by combining frizzled beef, onions, frizzled. And cheese in a small loaf of bread, Philadelphians Pat and Harry Olivieri are often credited with inventing the cheesesteak. The exact story behind its creation is debated, but according to many accounts, Pat and Harry Olivieri originally owned a hot dog stand and on one occasion decided to make a new sandwich using chopped beef and grilled onions. While Pat was eating the sandwich, a cab driver stopped by and was interested in it, so he requested one for himself. After eating it, the cab driver suggested that Olivieri quit making hot dogs and instead focus on the new sandwich.
Give up on the hot dogs, guy.
They began selling this near South Philadelphia's Italian Market. Let's see. Because I think the two cheesesteak places are still in South Philly.
Well, and Olivieri, Italian Market, 9th Street. Yeah, South Philly.
Yeah. Oh, my God. All these years later, the two Pats and Gino's are like 10 blocks south of this.
Nice.
That's really cool.
But yeah, I mean, Philadelphia was, you know, I mean, it was like the home of the laborer. Like, it was,
this is sick. This market is beautiful. And this urban fabric is gorgeous. Jesus
Christ.
It's
so nice. Yeah.
This is so lovely.
And it's just amazing, like, how consistently growing up we were conditioned to fear this type of urban environment simply because of its density and its association with multiculturalism.
At the same time, though, it's like people got mugged all the fucking time in the 70s. It's like, it was dangerous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's gotten less dangerous.
Well, it's gotten less dangerous because people have moved to other places. Like, it is now more affordable to live in the suburbs. And so now we have this reverse process whereby some of our neighborhoods with the best urban fabric are being refilled. I mean, you look at Williamsburg is probably the first one, right? Being refilled by the gentry of people, of children of people who left cities and grandchildren of people who left our central urban areas. And that process has forced out poor people who are in more desperate situations.
I'm sorry. I'm like, I'm just like Google Mapsing around South Philly right now.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm like, I'm so fucking jealous. This street is 12 feet wide.
Yeah.
Like what the fuck?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. I could bike here in perpetuity.
It would be hard to get killed by a car.
It would be impossible. It'd be fucking impossible.
Someone would have to like run you over and then back up over you.
Right. And they wouldn't even have a reason to run me over because the streets are so thin that I'd be going faster than them.
Exactly. Ooh, that's crazy. I found a place called Michael's Chinese Food. Michael's American Sushi Bar and Chinese Food. Shout out. They're our first sponsor.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
If you're ever in South Philly, our first sponsor is
Palantir.
No street sign. There we go. Wharton and 16th. You got to hit up Michael's Chinese Food. It's the best in the city.
Yeah. My God. One day, man. One day. We're going to own all of Philadelphia. We're going to be so fucking rich. They're going to rename it after us, South Philly.
Philly's great. I'm sorry. You can go,
What is this big thing? Okay, let's zoom out. And then do you see this big brown patch of like dead stuff just to the southwest of the city center? Like.
Yeah. Or the industry.
Yeah, what the fuck is this?
Oil refinery, I would guess.
They can't have a refinery there.
I mean, there's one in Denver.
But Denver is like...
The Bellwater District. The Schuylkill River. Philadelphia Gas Works.
Yeah, I guess it is oil.
Yeah.
Whoa. This looks like it was an active refinery that has been removed.
Yeah, I think that's true. And they probably can't build anything else on it.
Whoa. That's nine kinds of fucked up. I'm sure that gave like hundreds of thousands of people cancer.
Yeah. It also gave probably hundreds of thousands of people jobs.
I mean, I bet most people get cancer at work.
It's true.
Yeah.
Now, Philly's pretty amazing.
All right, just north of it. Do you see the name of the neighborhood?
Just north of the industrial district?
Yeah.
Gray's Ferry?
No, to the left of that.
Forgotten Bottom?
Yeah. Yeah. When I'm president, no bottom will be forgotten. Loads for all. Loads for all bottoms. All bottoms will be topped. And all tops will be bottomed.
Ooh, there is some housing in Forgotten Bottom. Yes, let's move to Forgotten Bottom. All right. This is where we're going to headquarter this podcast. I got to go back to Zillow and see what's available in Forgotten Bottom. Zillow doesn't even recognize Forgotten Bottom as a place. We didn't get that. Try a new search. No. I'm telling you, I want to live in Forgotten Bottom. I just have to do it manually here. There we go. Ooh, there are some residences for sale. There is a 700 square foot lot in Forgotten Bottom for sale for $60,000. Or there's a 4-bed, 4-bath townhouse for $400,000 or for $600,000.
I'm poking around in Kensington, though.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to see, like, all right, well, you know, people talk big shit about this part of the city.
And yeah.
It is pretty rough. It's pretty rough. It's townhomes, but they're just all boarded up.
Yeah. Well, there's that main drag underneath the old rail infrastructure, right? That's, like, the main drag.
Oh, like, is it an L? That...
Yeah, I think so. It might be the freeway, though.
Okay, here. Let me go to the drag. The driggity drag. This reminds me of Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Having the elevated train above the city.
Yep.
Like this. Big Brooklyn vibes.
Yeah, Kensington Avenue.
This is what it's like to be in Bushwick.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, obviously a lot of drugged out people. Really sad.
Yeah.
Guy on a Lime scooter. Pardon me.
Oops, you know, when there's a scrapyard that has a sign that says, "We buy junk cars," when that moves in, you know your neighborhood is really soaring.
Look, man, my neighborhood is taking off.
Dude, even the worst neighborhood in Philadelphia is better than the best neighborhood in Phoenix. like there's still a park here. No, so here's the real question. It's like, okay, so it's like this area is what many white people would call too scary now.
Yeah.
But like, you know, that's like that's the thing. It's like it always changes. Mm-hmm. It starts with a trickle, and then there's like a threshold of like, oh, it's so fucked up. But it's like white people do this, whether it's consciously or subconsciously. I think it occurs on both bases. But it's like they'll look at a neighborhood and they're like, I'm trying to strike the right balance of like affordability and how many black people live here. And it's like, it has to be, there have to be enough black people so I can afford to live here, but not so many black people that I don't feel comfortable living here. And it's like, you know, when is, because it's like, yeah, the bones, the urban fabric of North Philadelphia is solid, really solid. There will come a time under this economic system where people are like priced out, forced out, you know, urban renewal will occur. Maybe not through eminent domain this time, but just through like rising taxes, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, when? When will this be where the poets live?
Well, yeah. Well, there's the person who, I'm trying to find it, but there's the person who describes the like phases of gentrification, which I think is really valuable to consider. And that first phase is called the starving artist phase, where like the people on the fringes of society who don't make enough money to live elsewhere are sort of forced into living in places that have been historically relegated to black and brown people and people that are, you know, disenfranchised generationally. And so these starving artists, these white starving artists who, you know, actually don't have that many other options to live in the city that they want to live in to try to do their thing, move in. And then they make the neighborhood, quote unquote, cool to that next phase of people and make it safe enough for that next, quote unquote, to make it, for that next phase of people to move in who are sort of cosplaying. They're like bohemians, but they're cosplaying as starving artists and they are not actually starving artists. And then that third phase is the capitalists who see that now there's a market for things like yoga studios and frozen yogurt shops and this new clientele to serve. And that's when it really becomes destructive because prices go up and the people who were originally in the neighborhood and the people who moved there because they didn't have other options and because they wanted to live there and, you know, maybe added to the character of the neighborhood are essentially forced out and it becomes a haven for yuppies.
Can we talk about Camden?
Camden, New Jersey?
Camden, New Jersey, one of the highest poverty rates in the country. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Camden, good bones.
It's in Philadelphia's shadow there.
There's some of these. This interchange takes up like 5 acres around the Subaru dealership and the bus center.
Oh yeah.
Good God, what the fuck?
There's also a Baptist church inside that interchange.
Bro, I bet this cheesesteak shop in Camden, New Jersey is so fucking good.
I thought you were anti-cheesesteak.
It just says Tony and Ruth's Steaks, but it doesn't, the picture doesn't look like a cheesesteak. It looks like a chopped pork. Fuck. Oh my God, this looks good. Looks like a good deli.
The Walt Whitman house. Did Walt Whitman live in Camden? I guess he must have.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. Famed poet Walt Whitman's preserved former home where he died, open to the public for tours. It's on Dr. Martin Luther King Boulevard.
Wow.
Which is a pretty massive strode. There is a median.
Camden looks all right, Loki.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm going to need to hop off here and talk to my wife.
Tell the wife I say hi.
I will. How should I send you this recording?
Upload it to Google. Send me just a Google Drive link or something.
Okay. Will do.
That work? Yeah. Will you do that right now?
Yeah, I'll upload it and send it your way.
Yeah, and so I'll just like, if you send it to me right now, then I can publish this later.
Yeah. Sounds good. Okay.
All right, love all you, right, dude. Man. Good to talk.
I love you,
good
too.
Good podcast.
Good podcasting.
What's our signature sign-off?
I don't know.
Wishing you a tight bussy and a happy ending.
Yeah. I think that we should record, you know, another week and then maybe mash the two up into, a, you know, an episode.
I'll send you a few cuts. I mean, I'll see what I can do.
Yeah. Sounds good, man. Well,
what's our signature welcome? Oh, what's the name of our podcast? What's our fuck? What? Quick! We have like 2 minutes.
Street slop.
I like street slop.
Street slop.
Street beefs. Oh, that's already a thing. Homo urbanist. Man.
Yeah.
Are you into bus stuff? It's still on the table.
Yeah. I don't know. We can keep working on it.
Okay. And then every episode we sign off by going that I don't know. That's the podcast. Or like
look both ways.
I need some creative inspiration. Look both ways is good.
Yeah. You know, logging off, remember to look both ways and
driving is for women.
Look both ways and sell your car.
Sell your car. Sell your car and be a fucking man.
Do it. All right,
driving
buddy.
Is woman behavior. That's in that we're leaving that in.
Cut that.
Cut that.
All right.
I managed to call that one guy a Nazi, and then there was the one joke. I don't want to say it again because then I got to cut it out again.
You were born to podcast, so I'm sure we're going to figure this out.
Now, I think we go edgy.
Yeah.
The world doesn't have enough edgy white guy podcasters.
It's true. All right, I do have to go, but I love you, man. I'll talk to you soon.
I love you. See you soon.
All right, bye.
Send the cast.